Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. A heroic bystander, along with sheriff's deputies, saved the life of a drowning woman at Lindell Lakes in Lakeside. But the Good Samaritan and witnesses are asking why it took so long for deputies to take action. We'll have audio of this disturbing incident on today's show. We'll also have news of a drowning 2 days earlier, also in Lakeside, where the victim lost his life. San Diego County has declared a local public health emergency over monkeypox. Learn what you should know about the disease on today's show. Then on Crime Beat, a Granite Hills High School teacher and coach has been arrested for sexual misconduct. Several Aztec football players at SDSU are being investigated for alleged rape. In La Mesa, three people have been arrested in a sting operation for buying alcohol for minors. And a man is under arrest for stabbing a passenger in the head aboard a trolley in El Cajon. San Diego County has a new program to help people released from jails. Our region also just got a firefighting boost with a new helicopter to help CAL FIRE battle wildfires this fire season. An El Cajon man, Keithian Jones, was featured at Comic-Con, and his career is on the rise thanks to a teacher who believed in his talents, and we'll have the tales. Babs Fry is famed for rescuing lost pets in East County, and now the Hamul resident needs your help after her van was wrecked in an accident. On our Capitol Report, the PACT Act to provide health care coverage for veterans exposed to toxins like those from burn pits and Agent Orange is now on President Biden's desk awaiting signature. Four local representatives voted in favor, but Congressman Daryl Issa voted no on the bill that's drawn praise from major veterans organizations. Santee City Council has voted to legalize cannabis businesses, and Lemon Grove is reopening its long-closed recreation center, though just one day a week. On Destination East County, hear about some fun festivals and events coming up, from a grape stop to a concert to help the homeless and more. From California News Service, hear about the 50th anniversary of the Children's Health Insurance Program. And from Public News Service, we'll have some national news stories, including the latest on the Inflation Reduction Act in Congress. On Green Scene, we'll share some water-wise landscaping tips, plus hear about a new nationwide crisis line that you can call for help with mental health concerns. So stay tuned for the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. A woman was saved from drowning in Lindell Lake in Lakeside on August 2nd after a long standoff with sheriff's deputies and park rangers nearly ended in tragedy. A courageous bystander, Scott Wolf, finally entered the water to save the woman after she had submerged for nearly 40 seconds. Sheriff deputies followed and helped pull the woman, who had stopped breathing and had no pulse, out of the water. According to Lieutenant Amber Baggs, the woman was intoxicated and went swimming in the lake where it is prohibited. Lieutenant Baggs, when asked for comments by East County Magazine, replied, "Our deputies offered her bottled water, food, and a towel. Deputies were going to use a kayak to go in the water, but the woman said she was going to tip it over." Sheriff's radio call records obtained by East County Magazine through a public records request reveal that close to an hour and a half went by after the sheriff first received a 911 call. The sheriff has refused to release audio of that call. But 10 News reports that bystanders called 911 for a welfare check after the woman became argumentative and wandered in traffic. According to Wolf, the bystander who saved her life, as many as 7 officers arrived in addition to 5 park rangers. The woman jumped into the lake and repeatedly submerged and resurfaced over the next 40 minutes or more, according to the sheriff's radio logs. The logs and videos reveal that she cursed at deputies. Deputies then requested a boat from the sheriff's search and rescue team and also requested a sheriff crisis negotiations team. According to Lieutenant Baggs, deputies remained at the lake so they could continually watch the woman and continue to speak with her as they waited for the additional resources. Several deputies, appearing in no rush on the video, can be seen standing beside the lake, one stating that they must take their equipment off before they can enter the water. It is unclear why, after 40 minutes, none of them had taken their equipment off in anticipation of the need to go in. Dramatic video shot by bystander Angel New shows that some 40 minutes after she was in the water, the woman went under and didn't resurface. 40 seconds went by, as bystanders pleaded with deputies to save the woman. Here is audio of those 40 seconds, where both New and Wolf can be heard offering to go into the water while deputies hesitated. And warning, this may be disturbing to listen to.
She's not turning around, you guys.
We have to take her gear off before we can go in there.
Do you want a citizen to jump in? She's not moving.
I'll go in.
Oh my God. Do you want me just to jump in? Just jump in, get her, hurry. She's not moving, she's sinking. Come on, and seriously, hurry, dude.
Oi, hey, somebody get over here, now.
She's sinking. Oh my God.
Multiple deputies did finally remove their gear and enter the water after Wolf, slogging through the 3 feet of water with a muddy lake bottom that some have likened to quicksand. The victim was not breathing. She had no pulse. Her heart had stopped. Deputies hauled her to shore and began administering CPR until paramedics arrived. But they did not perform mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on the victim. New repeatedly offered to give the woman a breath, but nobody did so. The officers finally rolled the woman onto her side and pounded on her back until she expelled water. Here's what that sounded like.
Are you guys scared to do a breath? I'll do a breath.
Down, ears open down.
Go. I'll do a breath.
Open her mouth, open her mouth.
Okay, yeah. Come on, breathe, girl. Breathe, girl.
Keep going. There she goes.
She's breathing.
Paramedics transported the woman to a hospital. Lieutenant Baggs told us she is expected to make a full recovery, adding, "We are very appreciative of the Good Samaritan who assisted in these efforts, as well as the county park's staff from Lindo Lake." But on social media, witnesses have criticized the sheriff for not taking action sooner to save the drowning woman, and several videos have surfaced. Wolf, who is being hailed as a hero on social media, asks, "Why did it take a 56-year-old man with atrial fibrillation, congestive heart failure, and a cancer survivor to get into the water to save this woman?" He contends that the deputies were more concerned about their gear than they were saving this woman. Wolf adds that he provided instructions to the deputies on how to perform CPR on a drowning victim versus a non-drowning victim. We sent a link of the video and other details to candidates running for sheriff to request comments. Kelly Martinez has not replied. John Hemmerling stated that the number one priority of first responders is the preservation of human life. While he declined to weigh in on the conduct of any of the deputies in this incident, he said, "I believe the response of any agency's representatives is a direct reflection on the leadership at the very top." Dave Myers, a former sheriff's commander and prior candidate for sheriff, had this to say, "I can see there are issues with the initial non-response to eventual slow response by law enforcement on scene. A person was clearly in distress in a body of water, and law enforcement stood by," he said. Then Myers asked, "Is this the Uvalde effect?" A reference to the elementary school mass shooting in Uvalde, Texas, where officers stood for over an hour while lives were lost. He notes that a supervisor standing by was on the radio at Lindo Lake and questioned what directives were provided to subordinates before a frustrated citizen took matters into his own hands. The woman who nearly drowned could be heard on another video saying she was homeless and went for a swim because there were no showers that she could use. This was the second drowning incident in Lakeside in 2 days. On August 1st, a man believed to be homeless was less fortunate than the homeless woman who was saved. The man was found dead in a pond near Willow Road, near a tent where he may have been camping. These tragedies highlight the need for the county to increase efforts to provide shelters, housing, mental health services, and opportunities for homeless people to shower or bathe on these hot summer days instead of risking their lives to cool off or clean up in local ponds, lakes, or rivers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The body of a man believed to be homeless was found in a pond in Lakeside on August 1st. The sheriff's search and rescue dive team responded to a call and recovered the body in the pond near Willow Road near Moreno, just east of State Route 67. The man was wearing shorts with no shirt. Authorities indicated there were no obvious signs of trauma. The victim may have gone swimming and drowned, though the county medical examiner is slated to conduct an autopsy to determine the cause and manner of death. Lieutenant Chris Steffen, with the San Diego Sheriff's Department, told East County Magazine, "At this point, the death is suspicious in nature, however, there is no indication of foul play," adding that the circumstances of this incident are still under investigation. Sergeant Jay Wilson said authorities believe they know the victim's identity and that he was most likely homeless. Identification is pending notification of family. A photographer from Shiloh, Ireland Photography, covering the breaking news story for East County Magazine, says that a tent belonging to a homeless man has been camped near the site for some time, but was unoccupied on the day of the drowning. Anyone with information is asked to call the Sheriff's Homicide Unit at 858-285-6330, after hours at 858-565-5200. You can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is Marie Johnson with a health alert. San Diego public health officials declared a local public health emergency on August 2nd to proactively respond to monkeypox in the San Diego region. The local health emergency must be ratified in 7 days by the County Board of Supervisors and then will need to be ratified again every 30 days as needed. As of August 1st, a total of 46 confirmed and probable cases of monkeypox have been reported. One patient required hospitalization. Nathan Fletcher, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, says the county is taking monkeypox seriously, adding that the emergency declaration will allow the county to strengthen its vaccination, prevention, education, and treatment initiatives. Dr. Wilma Wooten, county public health officer, says to prevent the community-wide spread of monkeypox infection, the key is prevention, and this includes vaccinations. Although monkeypox is not a sexually transmitted disease, it is usually transmitted via close contact. To date, the vast majority of cases locally and nationally have been among men who have sex with men. People in close contact with monkeypox patients are also at risk. In addition, a new report from the Department of Homeland Security Science and Technology Directorate finds that the monkeypox virus can survive for weeks in water, soil, and refrigerated foods. It can also be transmitted through things like bed linens or towels, and the hardy virus can survive for months or even years inside scabs on an infected person. The county has been working with the LGBTQ community to develop messaging, education materials, and to administer the limited number of vaccines coming to the area. The county has also been communicating with other local jurisdictions and community groups. The county has conducted a forum and held mass vaccination clinics. To date, 3,987 doses of monkeypox vaccine have been received in San Diego County, and over 1,400 have been administered at vaccination events. The county has also made doses of vaccine available to local health care providers, as well as through county public health centers and STD clinics. The county has also distributed 110 treatment courses of Tecovirimat, a drug used to treat monkeypox, to local healthcare organizations and county clinics. Given the scarcity of the monkeypox vaccine, the county is focusing on delivering first doses to people at high risk. For the current outbreak, that includes men who have sex with multiple male partners and close contacts or reported cases. The county also set up a text message alert system to send San Diegans real-time information about monkeypox in the region. To sign up to receive the messages, text COSD monkeypox 2, that's TO, 468-311. For more information on monkeypox, how to prevent it, who should get vaccinated, you can call 211.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. A former Granite Hills High School teacher, who also coaches multiple sports, has been arrested on felony and misdemeanor sexual misconduct charges. The Grossmont Union High School District issued a press release stating that the district learned of the sexual misconduct allegations on June 14 and immediately notified law enforcement as well as child welfare services. The district also launched its own investigation. As a result, the employee no longer works for the Grossmont Union High School District, the release states. The district did not identify the teacher, citing privacy rights. However, NBC 7 reports that El Cajon Police Lieutenant Keith MacArthur identified the teacher as Gerald Lopez. The district's website lists Lopez as an English teacher. The website, Home Teams Online, states that Lopez chaired the school's English department and also coached multiple sports, including wrestling and football. He is a graduate of San Diego State University, the site indicates. Lopez was arrested for possession of obscene material of a minor in a sexual act, harmful matter sent with interest to seduce a minor, and annoying or molesting a victim under the age of 18. The district thanked El Cajon Police, adding, "We condemn all acts of sexual misconduct, take all such allegations very seriously, and are committed to taking swift and appropriate action to ensure the safety of our students, just as we've done in this case."
This is Marie Johnson with a Crime Beat report. San Diego Police and San Diego State University have launched investigations into five Aztec football players who were accused of raping a 17-year-old girl during an off-campus house party on October 16th last year. SDSU President Adela De La Torre issued a statement to students indicating that San Diego Police initially asked campus police to refrain from investigating after the university asked for details so that it could take action, Times of San Diego reports. De La Torre said SDPD formally requested the SDSU not intervene as intervention could compromise their criminal investigation. Since then, the school has received anonymous tips, which it has shared with police, and encouraged those providing reports to also contact SDPD. On July 22nd, San Diego Police notified SDSU that the campus could proceed with its own inquiry. De La Torre assured students that the campus is following California State University policy and has begun its investigation. She added that no one is above the law, and anyone found to have violated the law and university policy should suffer the consequences. SDPD's criminal investigation could lead to arrests. By contrast, SDSU's inquiry is limited to determining whether the football players violated campus policy, which could result in expulsion. Unlike police, SDSU investigators lack subpoena power or warrants to gather evidence. Names of the five players suspected of rape have not been released. However, the potential arrest and/or expulsion of the school's esteemed football team casts a cloud over the coming season, with the first exhibition game slated for August 10 and the season opener August 18 in the Aztecs' new home, Snapdragon Stadium.
Three people have been arrested for providing alcohol to minors in La Mesa. The arrests resulted from a shoulder tap sting operation with agents from the state's Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and detectives from the La Mesa Police Department. During a shoulder tap sting, an underage decoy, under supervision of a peace officer, approaches adults outside a liquor store or convenience store. The decoy tells them that he or she is under 21 and asks them to buy alcohol. Those who agree to buy alcohol for the minor face a minimum penalty of at least a $1,000 fine and 24 hours of community service. According to La Mesa Police Department, the program is intended to reduce the availability of alcohol to minors. Statistics show they generally have a higher rate of drunk driving crashes than adults. Studies also show the combination of alcohol and youth tends to increase criminal conduct. According to the American Medical Association, underage drinking can increase chances of risky behavior and teen pregnancy, juvenile delinquency, compromised health, and can result in unintentional injury or death. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
Joshua Lee Martinez of El Cajon has been arrested after allegedly stabbing a man aboard a trolley near the Marshall Avenue station in El Cajon. According to Lieutenant Randy Soulard with the El Cajon Police Department, a man and his girlfriend were confronted by the suspect and an argument ensued. The suspect then took out a knife and stabbed the victim repeatedly in the hand and arm before exiting the trolley at the Arnell Avenue stop and fleeing. The victim was transported to a local trauma center where he was treated and released. His injuries are considered non-life-threatening. With help from surveillance video and the La Mesa Police Department, detectives from the El Cajon Police Department were able to identify the suspect, a convicted felon with an extensive and violent criminal history. His prior arrests included possessing a dangerous weapon, domestic violence, robbery, assault with a deadly weapon, assault with a firearm, probation violation, and participation in a criminal street gang. Martinez was found near his home and arrested without incident, says Lieutenant Soulard. He adds a knife was discovered in Martinez's possession. However, at this time, it is unknown if the knife is the same weapon used during the stabbing. Martinez, who is 32 years old, was booked into San Diego County Jail on charges of attempted murder. The El Cajon Police Department is asking anyone with information on the trolley stabbing to call the El Cajon Police Department at 619-579-3311. You can also contact San Diego Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477 or leave an anonymous tip online at sdcrimestoppers.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Marie Johnson.
The County of San Diego has been awarded $6 million in Proposition 47 grant funds that will be used to help people returning to their communities after serving time in county jails. The financial support is earmarked for those leaving custody who have a history of behavioral health needs and are homeless or at risk of homelessness. The county will also leverage an additional $4 million for a total program of $10 million. Andrea Pella, Director of Prevention, Diversion, and Reentry for San Diego County, says the goal of this grant and the work of the Community Care Coordination Team is to help people leaving jail to gain independence, reduce criminal behavior, and future returns to jail, and therefore improve public safety. The proposed program is modeled after San Diego County's Community Care Coordination Program that connects people to the services they need in the community. Before release from jail, an adult in custody is referred to a team of clinicians and peer support specialists. The team will meet with the person being released, assess their needs, and help connect them to community support, such as behavioral health services, housing, and employment opportunities. When released, the person will be transported by a community care coordination team member directly to temporary housing. Soon after, the team will connect the person to behavioral health services for ongoing treatment, followed by introductions to job opportunities, benefit assistance, help to reconnect with family, and develop longer-term housing plans. The program will start in September with a goal of serving 300 to 400 people before the grant period ends in June of 2026. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Fire protection for our region just got a welcome boost. Starting August 1st, CAL FIRE's San Diego unit has exclusive use of a Type 1 helicopter for the duration of the 2022 fire season. The helicopter will operate out of the Ramona Airport to bolster the region's fleet of aviation firefighting assets, and it can be used by CAL FIRE throughout San Diego County for wildfire suppression. The call sign for the aircraft will be 95 Hotel Tango, and it has a tank capacity of 2,650 U.S. gallons. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Keithan Jones, an El Cajon resident, was celebrated at San Diego's International Comic-Con event as a featured special guest artist. He displayed his work, a comic book series titled Power Knights, at a booth in Artist Alley in the San Diego Convention Center. Jones also appeared on several panels, did media interviews, and greeted fans, attendees, and friends. How did he get to that celebrated spot? Talent and recognition by an elementary school instructor. Jones credits his sixth grade teacher at Los Altos Elementary School in San Diego with changing his path as an artist when she asked a life-changing question about what he would want. He responded, "My comic book printed," Jones told East County Magazine in an interview at Comic-Con. He added, "My teacher knew a local printer, and she had him make a copy and print it." This proved to be a building block to his future. His Power Knights comic book series features an African-American hero and characters, which is just a part of his artistic outpouring. On his Facebook page, the local artist says of the characters in Power Knights, "I wanted to keep it grounded by focusing on two brothers whose relationship is tested in many ways when they are thrown into a war between ultra-powerful beings. You'll find science fiction, fantasy, and love in the pages." Jones founded his own company, KID, which stands for The Kid in You Never Dies, to produce his comic books and other producers. He also springboarded into animation after a friend of his, Bobby Rubio, an accomplished artist at Pixar, recognized his talent and guided him into working as an artist on animated projects. Currently, he's been picked up by a Canadian company, Vortex Comics, and is working on a dark fantasy series, Chaos Breaker. Jones also created an annual Black History Month event called San Diego's Black Comics Day, Heroes Rise, which celebrates Afrocentric comics. Thanks to a teacher's belief in his talent and vision, Keithan Jones today is living his dream. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Elijah McKee with a People Power report. For nearly a decade, owners of lost pets have turned to Babs Fry for help. She's the one who gets the call from a frantic pet owner when a cat or dog goes missing, and from the California Highway Patrol, who calls when someone's pet is found wandering on the freeway. The Hamul resident runs a nonprofit called A Way Home for Dogs, and has helped reunite countless owners with their wayward pets. Now Fry is the one who needs some help. She was driving on Interstate 805 recently, on her way to set traps to catch a loose dog, when a speeding car rear-ended her Chevrolet Express van. She suffered some bumps and bruises, but no major injuries, but her Babs bus was totaled. She has been checking into buying a gently used van similar to the one she had, but the prices are staggering, she says. And due to production slowdowns caused by COVID-19, supply challenges, and high consumer demand, the availability of the vehicles she needs could be months or even years away. Fry said she doesn't like to reach out to the public to ask for help, but she's in need of volunteers who can help her at her Humwool-based rescue facility, where there are 60 dogs that need to be cared for. She told East County Magazine, "A big thing people don't realize is that very few people step up. In the field, it's me and a handful of people." She says shelters are at capacity, and rescue groups are also at capacity. Her rescue group relies on funding to continue their work saving pets. You can donate to help buy a replacement vehicle for Babs Fry and support her rescue efforts at awayhomefordogs.com. Fry's staff says they are also hoping to catch the attention of a car dealer who would be willing to donate a van to meet her needs and those of animals in need.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. A bill to provide health care and benefits for millions of veterans exposed to toxins during their military service has passed the Senate by an overwhelming 86-11 vote. That includes 37 Republicans voting in favor, including Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, as well as all Democrats. The measure earlier passed the House by a 256-174 vote. Four of San Diego's congressional representatives, as well as both California senators, all voted in favor. But Congressman Darrell Issa, a former Army captain himself, voted against it, even though his San Diego County district has one of the largest populations of active duty military members and veterans in the nation. House Resolution 3967, the Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act, is also known as the PACT Act. It will provide coverage for veterans exposed to burn pits in Afghanistan and Iraq, Agent Orange in Vietnam, and more. President Biden has pledged to sign the measure into law. For Biden, the issue is personal, since his son, Beau, died of brain cancer after exposure to burn pits while serving in Iraq. Last week, when veterans protested outside the Capitol over some Republicans' efforts to block the bill, Biden sent pizza to the demonstrators and held a video call with families while he was isolating due to COVID. Upon passage by the Senate of the bill, Biden said, "While we can never fully repay the enormous debt we owe to those who have worn the uniform, today the United States Congress took important action to meet this sacred obligation. I look forward to signing this bill so that veterans and their families and caregivers impacted by toxic exposures finally get the benefits and comprehensive health care they earned and deserve," the president said. The Department of Defense estimates that 3.5 million service members have been exposed to toxins, and yet the Department of Veterans Affairs has denied about 75% of veterans' burn pit claims. The Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction found burn pits to be indefensible due to emissions potentially harmful to U.S. service members. Those toxins include dioxin, the same chemical found in Agent Orange, as well as benzene, particulate matter, hexachlorobenzene, volatile organic compounds, carbon monoxide, and hydrocarbons, among others. The level of toxins in burn pits has increased, as the growing number of plastics has. Such toxins can cause cancer, respiratory disorders such as emphysema and asthma, high blood pressure, increased risk of birth defects, and low sperm count, researchers have found. Veterans of Foreign Wars, or VFW Commander Tim Borland, hailed passage of the bill as a landmark victory for veterans of all ages, of all conflicts, and their families. He adds, "Too many of our veterans have suffered over the years from effects of toxic exposure with no medical care, no recompense, and no support for their loved ones. They fought with everything they had to prove their illness was service-connected and were delayed or denied care until death overtook them." Jeremy Butler, Chief Executive Officer of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, stated in a press release while the measure was pending in Congress, "This legislation will help the many thousands of veterans suffering from military toxic exposures such as burn pits who have inadequate access to VA benefits. It is comprehensive legislation that will address the needs of veterans that are suffering from toxic exposure by ensuring that they have the health care and benefits that they deserve." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Santee is the latest city in San Diego County to permit cannabis businesses, including sale of cannabis or marijuana, within its borders after a 3-2 vote by the City Council on July 27th. The Council voted to approve a community benefits agreement, a type of development agreement that prevents a public vote via a ballot measure. Councilman Ron McNellis motioned to approve the agreement. Council members Laura Colval and Dustin Trotter joined him to vote in favor. Mayor John Minto and Vice Mayor Ron Hall voted against the measure. Under California law, personal use of marijuana is legal statewide, but cities and counties have the right to control whether or not it can be sold within their borders. Cities such as Santee can also decide whether or not to allow manufacturing of cannabis products, cannabis growing, and other cannabis businesses. Santee had previously prohibited sale of cannabis, but the council now believes it needs to be proactive and regulate the cannabis before the state or private parties challenge the law and potentially prevail. Should that happen, Santee would have little or no control over how the drug is sold, the locations of dispensaries, or how it's taxed, some council members said. Council member Koval said that over the last year, her opinion has changed as she's become more educated on the issue. McNellis said the drug dispensaries would be regulated, adding that claims by opponents that legalization will cause an uptick in crime don't hold up. He added that the community benefit agreement model will give the city greater flexibility in making any changes should that become necessary in the future. Cannabis legalization has grown strong opposition from some community members who argued against it in a series of public meetings held over the past year. Jim Bartell, a former Santee City Councilman and a consultant for some cannabis businesses, testified that there have been no law enforcement problems associated with the approximately 40 dispensaries approved in San Diego County. He claimed that cannabis is safer than many drugs found in people's medicine cabinets. Vice Mayor Hall, who strongly opposes local cannabis sales, said while California has made cannabis legal, its use is still against federal law. He noted that people who are high on cannabis can cause fatal auto accidents and believes the promise of increased tax revenue isn't worth the downside of selling the drug, which he considers an entry drug for young people. Mayor Minto, a former San Diego police detective, didn't comment about the proposed law before voting against it. Just how much the city can collect from the sales of cannabis is unclear, since the council didn't adopt a set of specific fees or taxes. City Attorney Sean Haggerty said those issues will be brought back to the council at a future meeting. Santee staffers estimated at one meeting that sales per dispensary could reach about $3.5 million annually. The council has discussed taxes ranging from 4% to 12% of gross sales, but has not set any specifics in the newly adopted law. In earlier workshops, the council said it would limit the number of retail outlets to 4. However, it didn't put any number on possible manufacturing, distribution, or testing facilities that may be permitted. The locations of these facilities are confined to the city's industrial and commercial zones, primarily in the city's southeastern section. Cannabis facilities cannot be located within 900 feet of schools, daycare centers, youth centers, religious locations, and parks, according to the ordinance. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Lemon Grove residents, many who call for restored public access to the recreation center, will see a new step taken in that direction as the city looks for a fresh start with its recreation offerings. For the next 6 months, the city will run a Recreation Center Open Saturdays pilot program at the facility, during which they will collect data on its usage and either continue, modify, or discontinue the program in January, based on what is learned. This effort was added to the agenda on the heels of the City Council's April priority setting session. According to a staff report, the pilot program will cost around $11,000. That expenditure will grant access from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. each Saturday, besides holidays, when anyone will be free to come to 3131 School Lane in Lemon Grove and use the spacious gym, outdoor spaces, and classrooms for individual and group activities. There may soon be a scheduling program for those who wish to pay a small fee to reserve their spaces, but if a room is open, it will be completely free to use, similar to the city's gazebos. The action taken by city staff to set up the pilot program comes at a moment when Lemon Grove officials unanimously agree that increasing recreation opportunities is needed, but are wary of biting off too much too soon. Despite having seen more financial recovery at the end of the past fiscal year than in recent years, and being able to absorb the cost of a six-month trial, a cautious approach is being charted. Councilmember George Gastel reasoned, "I don't want to make commitments that we would end up going back on. That's one of my biggest worries," he said. City Manager Lydia Romero stressed that the new pilot program is not restoring the recreation department that was cut in 2011. For now, it is solely focused on Saturday access to the facilities. The July 19th City Council meeting that ended with the pilot program discussion began with Mayor Raquel Vasquez attempting to have Councilmember Liana LeBaron escorted from the room for talking out of order. A 5-minute break was taken so LeBaron could gather her things, but she did not budge. The mayor eventually resumed the meeting and gave LeBaron one last chance. The incident was not revisited at any point in the meeting. The discussion included a report from City Manager Romero, public comment, and input from the City Council. Residents voiced their support of the effort, but asked for it to not stop with the pilot and to continue to build after-school access, organized events, and publicity. One resident, Jerry Ramsey, said, "I believe the pilot program you guys are running without quality programming in place is going to be set up for failure." Mayor Vasquez, who fully supported the pilot program but did emphasize the limited scope Romero outlined, responded to the resident. "I want to make sure that everyone's expectations are managed on this," she said. "No one wants to set anyone up for failure. If failure should happen, we all fail, and if we succeed, we all succeed together." City Manager Romero added that the staff available to run the pilot program are already overworked and not trained in recreation programming, but that sponsoring programs with volunteers requires the city to cover a large amount of liability, especially when kids are involved. She made clear that for right now, efforts driven by residents with no sponsorship from the city are perfect. Indeed, a discussion board on Facebook already has 150 members envisioning the future of the facility. For any and all interested residents, there will now be an 8-hour window every Saturday with support from the city to enjoy community-driven initiatives like pickleball, knitting, and art classes at the recreation center. Councilmember Jennifer Mendoza, who pushed for the 8-hour pilot program over a 6-hour version and who asked for the scheduling component, was excited to be moving forward with the plan. During her final comments, she said, "I do also want to say thank you very much to our community members for your persistence and your dedication to getting this done. We can do it again. We can make this a success." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week. This week's Destination East County highlights upcoming East County events, including the Ramona Country Fair, a star party at Mission Trails, a Laurel and Hardy comedy night, community concerts and car shows in several communities, a concert to benefit the homeless in El Cajon, candlelight concerts on Mount Helix, the Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival, and more. If you missed the county fair, you can still enjoy carnival games, wild rides, live music, prizes, and award-winning foods at the Ramona Country Fair. This old-fashioned event is held July 29th through 31st at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Hosted by the Ramona Chamber of Commerce, the fair also features vendors, craftspeople, wine and beer tasting, and shows including medieval and Renaissance performances, Wild West skits, equestrian demonstrations, a cornhole tournament, and live music from country to rock and roll. For a full schedule, you can visit ramonachamber.com. El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells, his band, and friends will rock the Magnolia Theater in El Cajon August 6th to raise funds for the East County Transitional Living Center, which helps homeless people transition off the streets. The center is aiming to expand its emergency shelter program to help more homeless families with children. The concert will feature classic rock and starts at 7:45 p.m. All ages are welcome. For tickets, visit ectlc.org. The San Diego Astronomy Association invites you to a star party at Mission Trails Regional Park on the first Friday of every month, weather permitting, starting at sunset. The next one is Friday, August 5th. Meet up at the Kumeyaay Lake Campground at Mission Trails. For details on this and other Mission Trails Regional Park's events, you can visit mtrp.org. Lakeside Historical Society invites you to its annual boutique and vintage sale on August 4th, 5th, and 6th from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. The event will be held at the Old Community Church and Lakeside Historical Museum on Main Avenue in historic downtown Lakeside. Items for sale will include glassware, hats, dishes, jewelry, notions, vintage clothing, and miscellaneous museum items. You're invited to meet artist Jackie Hansen at an opening reception of her art show at Trevi Hills Winery in Lakeside. The opening will be on Saturday, August 6th at 2 p.m. through 7 p.m., and the art show will run longer from August 5th through August 31st. Hansen, an East County artist, likes to enhance the natural landscape with scenes and characters from her imagination. She says, "I like to paint not only what is, but what could be, and hope perhaps to inspire the future." Many of her current works are wine-oriented, reflecting her desire to see more vineyards in Lakeside, where she resides. For more information, you can visit trevihillswinery.com, and that's spelled T-R-E-V-I, hillswinery.com. Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of Sons of the Desert, the official Laurel and Hardy fan organization, will host their next gathering, Caveman Comedies, on August 13th at 7 p.m. at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. The Saps are turning back the clock to prehistoric times with Stan and Ollie and flying elephants. This month's guest comedian is Charlie Chaplin as a cave guy who wants one of the caveman king's many wives in his prehistoric past. The event also includes showings of the film Helpmates and a short cartoon, Thicker Than Water, plus a raffle and laughs galore. For more information, you can visit Saps at Sea Facebook page. The Mount Helix Food and Wine Festival on August 20th provides spectacular views at sunset with tastes of top restaurants and beverage companies, as well as artwork by local artists and dancing under the stars to music by Surf's Up, a Beach Boys cover band, and the Surf Birds. This is a party with a purpose, supporting one of San Diego's most beautiful historic places. Advance tickets are available at mounthelixpark.org/events. The Fever Events Candlelight Series brings classical music to the amphitheater atop Mount Helix on August 12th and again on September 9th at 8 p.m. The concerts feature classical and popular music played by a string quartet beneath the stars, surrounded by the glow of candlelight in a spectacular setting. The program includes classical works such as Vivaldi's Four Seasons, as well as pop pieces like George Gershwin's Summertime and Simon & Garfunkel's A Hazy Shade of Winter. For tickets and details, visit mounthelixpark.org/events, and that's Mount Helix is MT, helixpark.org/events. Cajon Classic Cruise car shows are held every Wednesday night all summer long from 5 to 8 p.m. in the heart of downtown El Cajon, where thousands of people converge on Main Street near Magnolia to visit displays of classic vehicles. Many attendees enjoy arriving early to dine at local restaurants, including some with outdoor seating. The events customarily also include a DJ with music to liven up festivities. The theme for the next two events, August 10th and 17th, are Cajon Speedway Family Night and Rat Rod Rally. You can find more upcoming classic cruise night happenings at downtownelcajon.com. You're also invited to enjoy outdoor concerts open to the community every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon. The next two concerts feature Soul Persuaders on August 5th and the Jim Allen Band on August 12th. Find more concerts at downtownelcajon.com. The La Mesa Village Association invites you to enjoy the La Mesa Classic Car Show running each Thursday night from 5 to 8 p.m. now through August. Visitors can stroll down La Mesa Boulevard between 4th Street and Spring to see vintage vehicles and enjoy live music from local bands that play atop the La Mesa Lumber Truck Stage at 3rd and La Mesa Boulevard, as well as a DJ during the festivities. Upcoming bands include Detroit Underground on August 4th and Love is a Rose on August 11th. Find the full schedule at lamesavillageassociation.org. Santee's Summer Concert Series has performances every Thursday night from now through August 18th at Town Center Community Park from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Guests are encouraged to bring a picnic lunch to enjoy in the park. The next show features Betamax August 4th and Cassie B's 90s Remix on August 11th. You can find more Santee concerts at santeesummerconcerts.com. Lemon Grove's last outdoor concert in the park this season will be held Thursday, August 4th at Berry Street Park, starting at 6:30 p.m. The season finale will feature the band Barb Wire playing country music. And finally, Viejas Casino and Resort has some hot summer nights entertainment lined up at its outdoor park at Viejas and Alpine. The remaining August concerts are Blue Oyster Cult on August 5th, Country Fest August 6th, and En Vogue on August 19th. For tickets and details, visit viejas.com/entertainment.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This week marks the 25th anniversary of the Children's Health Insurance Program, called CHIP, which in California is part of Medi-Cal. The program has been wildly successful. As of 2020, just 3.6% of kids in the Golden State were uninsured. Medi-Cal and CHIP serve almost 5.5 million children in the state. Joan Alker with the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families says even though most children are healthy, it's too big a risk to go without health insurance.
So any gap in coverage for children is a problem for families, and for our country as a whole, it pays enormous dividends to make sure that children have access to health insurance so they can grow up healthy and thriving.
The state legislature has steadily improved Medi-Cal by making undocumented children eligible in 2016 and by eliminating all premiums as of July 1st. Alexandra Parma with the First Five Center for Children's Policy says California is working to get federal approval to allow kids to stay on Medi-Cal from birth to age 5.
The change would allow children to be continuously enrolled in Medi-Cal until their 5th birthday. So they wouldn't have to do those annual renewals as under the previous policy.
Sarah Crow, also with First Five, says CHIP's biggest flaw is that too few doctors accept Medi-Cal, resulting in long wait times to see existing providers.
We have too few providers that accept Medi-Cal because of very low payment rates that are offered through the Medi-Cal program. So that's where the program suffers.
Crow Crow advises parents to ensure the county medical office has a current address on file so no one loses coverage. You see, the state held off on sending out annual renewal notices during COVID, but that will change once the pandemic state of emergency is lifted. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The proposal produces no meaningful reduction in the deficit or with inflation. Any suggestion otherwise is insulting to the intelligence of the American people.
Deb Fischer of Nebraska and other Republicans are pushing back against a $739 billion climate tax and health care package. The Congressional Budget Office acknowledged the bill's immediate effect on inflation would be negligible, but would decrease the deficit by roughly $300 billion. Democrat Ed Markey of Massachusetts called it the most significant investment in climate action in history.
This bill will not correct every economic injustice in our society or rectify the economic disparities between big oil billionaires and working families, but it starts a process that we absolutely need to level the playing field.
Democrats want to use the reconciliation process by passing a filibuster. The chamber is delaying its August recess to work on the measure into the weekend. Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra officially declared the monkeypox outbreak a public health emergency 2 weeks after the World Health Organization did the same.
We're prepared to take our response to the next level in addressing this virus, and we urge every American to take monkeypox seriously.
Amid increased tensions with China over Taiwan, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby says a planned intercontinental ballistic missile test launch has been delayed.
The lines of communication are still open with Beijing, and we're using those lines of communication.
The Pentagon also directed an aircraft carrier to remain in the area near Taiwan to keep an eye on recent test missile launches by China. Meanwhile, FBI Director Christopher Wray says the nation is facing many criminal and national security threats.
Whether it's gangs terrorizing a neighborhood, well-known trigger pullers who keep finding their way back out onto the streets, robbery crews graduating from carjackings to aggravated assaults, and worse, the violent crime problem is real.
During the oversight hearing, Senator Ted Cruz slammed his boot on the table as he questioned Wray about an alleged FBI list of symbols affiliated with extremist groups.
Also included on this is a text that I was particularly struck is the Gonzales battle flag. Come and take it as indicative of being a violent extremist militia. Well, I will self-report right now that every day in the Senate, I wear my boots that have the Gonzales battle flag on the back of them. Director Wray, what are y'all doing?
Wray said he was not familiar with the document. And Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is making waves for suspending a state attorney general who pledged to not prosecute people under the state's new 15-week abortion ban.
When you flagrantly violate your oath of office, when you make yourself above the law, you have violated your duty. You have neglected your duty.
DeSantis also condemned Andrew Warren for his support of gender-affirming treatment for trans minors. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. When Samuel Taylor Coleridge put that line into his Rime of the Ancient Mariner in 1798, he left out lawn watering. Being from soggy old England, having enough water for a proper garden or lawn wasn't a priority for the author. Still, his suggestion of being surrounded by something you can't use fits San Diego when it comes to water use. The salty waters of the Pacific Ocean may seem limitless, but they're not usable for household water needs. That's why San Diego buys fresh water from Northern California and the Colorado River. But drought and climate change are drying up many formerly reliable water sources. Lake Mead, fed by the Colorado River, is at its lowest point ever recorded, for example. As water needs increase with population growth, it's clear that San Diego needs to find ways to get the most from every drop. Water agencies and local cities have invested in things like water recycling programs, but residents also need to do our part to reduce water usage through things like water-wise native plants and more efficient irrigation. Here are some tips. It's not just how much you water that counts, it's how well you water. That's true whether you're watering a lawn or a backyard garden. Efficiency is a key to water use anywhere, but it's especially critical in an area with an arid climate and very little rainfall. An automatic watering system saves water, time, and money, especially if it's programmed to come on when it can do the most good. Cycle and soak irrigation provides water in multiple reefer cycles, providing more water to your lawn's roots by preventing runoff. By blending hard elements such as rocks or patio pavers with your grass lawn, you reduce the size of your watering footprint and make your yard more visually interesting. You can even reduce fire danger by having less combustible plant materials. Now, before people started putting in grass lawns that seemed to have an unquenchable thirst, it's not as if San Diego was an expanse of bare dirt. Native plant and flowers did just fine without irrigation systems and people to nurture them. Adapted to the local soil and climate, they were heat-tolerant and drought-resistant, and they still are. Succulents like cacti and agave are designed to protect themselves against hot weather and even fire. San Diego sunflowers tolerate dry weather and bloom most of the year. Colorful California fuchsia is easy to grow and attracts hummingbirds. Cultivating native plants is a great way to be more water-friendly at home and comes with the side benefit of also being low maintenance. The average Californian uses 85 gallons of water per day at home, most of that outdoors. With California in the grip of a persistent drought, the city of San Diego has implemented stricter water restrictions that will be in place until at least June of next year. That means limits on lawn watering and even a ban on car washing at home. Other jurisdictions in our region may follow suit if the drought persists or worsens. That's just part of the strategy to create a more water-friendly community. San Diego also has a variety of incentives to help people save water, rebates for replacing turf, installing irrigation systems, and collecting water that falls from the sky into an old-fashioned rain barrel. As water consciousness grows in San Diego, new habits can help our community become both water-friendly and water-wise.
Starting now, people contemplating suicide or families experiencing a mental health crisis can call 988 instead of 911 and get the help they need. The new 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline funnels callers to 13 mental health agencies across the state. Trained operators can connect people with suicide crisis counseling and mental health de-escalation counseling over the phone. Dr. Lisa Payan-Berlin with Parents Anonymous applauds the effort.
They're also trying to avoid police intervention. They want mental health intervention because when we've had police intervention, they're not trained to handle mental health problems and some tragedy happens.
Many jurisdictions, including LA County, will dispatch a mobile crisis team to the scene if appropriate. If a family issue is less urgent, the Lifeline has already begun passing callers along to the California Parent and Youth Helpline. That number, which people can call or text, is 855-427-2736, or you can live chat on their website, caparentyouthhelpline.org. Dr. Payan-Berlin says Parents Anonymous launched the California Parent and Youth Helpline in 2020 to connect families with trained counselors and free online support groups.
They call us because they want to talk to us as a parent, or they are having an emotional meltdown because the child is acting out, or they got kicked out of school, or they got arrested. You can call us.
The state of California is spending $20 million to support the 988 Lifeline in the Golden State. The new state budget funds the California Parent and Youth Helpline at $1.6 million a year for 3 years. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County into Scanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, royalty-free music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.